Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. This is Velen Vanderhorst, your host for the show. So apologies to my guests here for the show, Scott Malthouse. I've been sitting on this recording for a few weeks. I thought I would be republishing it, a lot sooner than I actually am, in any case. Just got backtracked by a few different things. But better late than never, I suppose, which I guess it should be the motto of the website, given my publishing frequency these days. I mean, still, plans to be getting better, with plans to be pivoting and doing a little bit different things and publishing games. Anyhow, on that vein, if you follow the podcast, you may have listened to the episode that I published playing a single, a role-playing game for a single player called Quill, which is a letter-writing game. And I played the game writing a letter and interspersed it with thoughts about the game and thoughts about marketing and strategy and creativity and writing and not so much writing. Well, insofar as I was writing a letter, it was a pretty bad letter, to be fair. Or at least I thought so. I thought you could get a lot better at this. And subsequently, I contacted Scott, who created and wrote the game. And he agreed to have a conversation with me. So it was really great to have a conversation with me. Scott is in a similar field as me because he works in PR and communications in England. And so it's great to have his perspective, both working up as a communication professional and as a role-playing game author. He wrote Quill, and he just recently announced that it's going to be having a print run, which is very exciting. And he also last year published his first game that was his first printed game, I believe, called Romance of the Perilous Land. He's also a big folklore fan, so we talked a little bit about British folklore and the folklore of the British Isles and what kind of folklore he was interested in. So it was a really rich conversation, a lot of fun to be looking back at the episode where I recorded myself. So I still want to do more of this kind of thing, which is to say play storytelling and role-playing games with other people and then possibly have a conversation with the author of it. So, and I'm still looking at the best way to do that while juggling everything else that I have going on. And everything else means these days a lot of just redeveloping a professional network in Paris, some freelance work in brand strategy. So helping businesses figure out what their brand is about or figure out the positioning for their brand or help advertising agencies do communications for their clients, et cetera. So if ever you need anything of the like, so just don't hesitate keeping in touch with me. I'm still looking for new stuff. And I work with other people internationally. I've had the chance of working with some people in the States as well as in London last month, pretty much. So yeah, I think that's a little bit what's going on. What else is happening? I was lucky to go on vacation with my nieces skiing in Andorra in the Pyrenees Mountains, which was fantastic. One of the reasons I moved back to Paris is to be able to be closer to my family. So to go on holidays with my brother, sister-in-law, and my nieces was just a treat. And it was my first time skiing this season. I've just been focusing on a lot more work and developing contacts in Paris. So I'm still doing a lot of that. I think next step as I keep developing in Paris is also going to be, keeping in touch with people in London because I lived there for a very long time as well. And I'd like to go at some point, figure out the right time to go and spend a few days in London. We'll see about that. And also play games. So I worked out that there's a board game night at a board game cafe near me in the center of Paris. Went to that one night, which was really cool. And still playing role-playing games with a few different people, organizing for a convention I'm going to be going to in a castle in the south of France, which should be pretty cool and pretty geeky, but pretty cool. That's going to be in May. And a string of 40th birthdays, because, of course, I turned 40 last year, so I got a lot of my close friends that are turning 40 and have been in the past year and still a couple more to come in May. So I had two back-to-back 40th birthdays, one in Dublin and one in England, so I was traveling for that as well. And what else is there to say? I think that's about it. It's a really warm winter, which is completely crazy. I was out in the Pyrenees Mountains. It's a slow season for France and the Pyrenees Mountains. I was lucky to go to Andorra. So they had snow, even though it hadn't snowed in several weeks. So it was a little bit, mixed between icy and slushy. On the plus side, it was very sunny. But it is pretty crazy to see not a single ounce of snow or bit of snow or cold under 2,000 meters, nearly, 1,900, 2,000 meters. There's a lot of lower reaches, lower altitude ski resorts that are just completely closed in the Pyrenees Mountains. One of them, one small family resort, made international news because they helicoptered snow in, 50 tons of snow, to be just covering the lower slopes. Because the other thing is they can't, I mean, it's too warm for snow cannons. That doesn't hold. They just can't use it. And I was in the south of France and it was really warm. Paris is warm too. I mean, the weather is, you know, changing, but it's just unseasonably warm. So it's weird to see the difference in my lifetime of how warmer things are getting, temperature is getting, and how seasons are changing. And I don't know, I seem to be in contact with more people that are concerned, or at least, or not at least concerned, or doing a lot more active work towards either raising knowledge of climate change or reducing their carbon footprints or et cetera, that kind of thing. So I'm starting to look at that myself. Obviously, my carbon footprint from a flight perspective in the past has been pretty high. A little bit lower this year, I suppose. But I still did several transatlantic flights last year. So, yeah, I haven't really looked at that particular equation. So that's something to be interested in, I guess. It's something that I'm looking at in addition to everything else that I'm reading. I'm almost finished with a book about Zen Buddhism, which is pretty cool. Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. It's a big classic. I had dropped it on the side and I just picked it up again. It's nice to be reading that. Well, I'm just rambling right now. So give me one more second to do a little bit of the promotional type stuff. If you're listening to this, whether it's the first time or, you know, if you're a regular listener of the podcast, it'd be awesome if you haven't yet posted a review, 5 stars, ideally, or if it's not 5 stars, please tell me why, with a few nice words about why you enjoy it, or just send me a tweet. That's at ICVillem, letters ICWILLEM. The full website where you can find more about my services and my blog and articles and things like that is at icecreamforeveryone.net. Everything's spelled out, Ice Cream for Everyone. I have a Facebook page as well. I've not been massively active on Twitter either, to be honest. But I look at it on a regular basis. And yeah, so if you can post a review, I know that anybody who takes the time to just send a tweet, post a review to say why they enjoyed it or if they enjoyed it, makes a really big difference in motivating me to publish more episodes and contacting more potential guests. And still on my idea of recording and publishing people playing games and then reflecting on them, particularly with creative industry professionals. So that's like a kind of wide net. That's anybody from designers to strategists to marketers. People who are interested in gaming. I might try to put together a regular-ish group of people and like a little roster of people, because it's otherwise very difficult to coordinate people's schedules. So I'm looking at that slowly. And I think that's about it. Yeah. So without further ado, here is Scott Malthouse of Trollish Delver Games. Enjoy. Hey, Scott, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you very much for making time.
No, it's good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And this is the first time I'm excited, because it's the first time I'm always saying I'm excited. I seem to be easily excitable. I think it is. It's a good thing. I've been, you know, I lived in the States the last few years, and there's excitable enthusiasm over there, which I sometimes as a Frenchman get a little bit over it. But coming back to France, it's a good thing to bring over, because we have a little bit too much of the garish cynicism going on.
Oh, yeah, we have it over here, so that's fine.
Yeah, north of England in particular, or England
that's
overall.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, you said yes to the north of England in particular?
That's right, yeah, in the north of England. Well, the whole of the UK. I mean, I'm sure you've seen what's happening in the news at the moment.
Uh-huh. Yes, well, that's everywhere. France is also in an interesting situation. Yeah, thank you very much for making time. And this is the first time I do this format where I've been saying for months I wanted to play games and record myself playing games and kind of change a little bit my usual interview format. And, you know, rather than wait while actually struggling to organize, my original goal was to have a role play game with a few different people and then record it. I still have that as a goal. But then I found out the existence of solo role-playing games that had like escaped my notice for a little while. And I was talking about that on the French role-playing game podcast that I contribute to, Les Voix d'Altaride, where we did a special all about solo role-playing games. And then I just looked around and I found Quill, and I thought it seemed like a really interesting game, and finally recorded myself and published that last episode and reached out to you. So we're having this conversation now. I'm really looking forward to getting to know you a little bit better and getting to know a little bit better about everything surrounding Quill and your work and other games that you've published and et cetera. But let's start with a quick, like, just potted introduction. Do you want to tell us a bit about, you know, where you're from, et cetera?
Yeah, sure.
North of England, I mentioned, but you know.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm from Leeds in the north of England. And so I live in the suburbs with my my girlfriend and my cat. I work in the city. So I work in PR.
Yeah.
So I was originally trained as a journalist in university. And then coming out, realizing that there are absolutely no jobs in journalism at all, apart from a bit of freelancing side gigs. And I decided to go into PR, which I've been doing for the past 9 years now, an agency.
Yeah. And this is great because it's a related field in terms of professional communications with the kind of marketing and branding that I do. And I know some people with my type of job in strategy have been working more on the PR side. Do you specialize, or does your agency specialize in any kind of industries? Or
yeah, so we work purely digitally, but in terms of industry, we work completely across the board. I've got FMCG clients, fast moving consumer goods, recruitment, technology, kind of everything. As long as it's online, we do it.
Yeah. Cool. Great. And the role-playing game side of things, there was your writing and playing role-playing games, did that precede your interest in journalism as well? Or?
Oh, yeah, totally. That came quite a long time ago when I was a kid. I think it probably came straight from the Fighting Fantasy game books. My stepdad came home once and he had a big stack of these old, like, they were really, really old, like smelly, all yellowed. They'd clearly been kept in like a smoking den or something. And he just gave me this stack of these amazing books, which were the Fighting Fantasy game books. I loved them because they were gross. The art, not because they were yellowed from cigarette smoke. And they had these amazing covers, and these were kind of the green spine ones. So kind of the, I don't know what printing they were, but they were fairly early on. Mm. And these are, of course, the kind of choose your own adventure, but with dice and combat and monsters and things like that. So I really got into reading those. And then I was introduced to Warhammer, I think, as a lot of geeky kids are.
Yeah.
And I played,
at least that, I say, yes, I was too. So
yeah. So I got into Warhammer 40,000 a little bit when I must have been turning maybe 10 or 11. And I played that a bit, but I think my heart was set on playing something a little bit more like a role-playing game.
You're talking about the miniatures, right?
Yeah.
My head went to the tabletop role playing game.
That's what
I found out about first. But
yeah,
the 40K one, the fantasy, medieval fantasy one. Yeah.
Well, I've always wanted to play the Warhammer Fantasy. I've never picked it up yet, but I do need to. But no, the miniatures game. I heard about Dungeons and Dragons kind of on the periphery. It's something you kind of hear about, and myself and my friend went into town and we went to one of our local gaming stores, and we found that, well, they did Dungeons and Dragons, but this was when I think third edition had just come out, so there's still a lot of second edition stuff, a lot of AD&D. Now, we had no idea what Advanced Dungeons and Dragons was. We just thought it was this must be a more difficult version of Dungeons and Dragons. We can't touch that. We're amateurs. We're not pros. But the very helpful chap there, he introduced us to third edition there and said, look, if you want to get started, this is the one to go for. I mean, you know, it's still third edition. I don't know if you've played it. It's still fairly,
I did not actually. I had I still have, I'm looking at them, the advanced D&D books that I played a little bit of. And then I didn't play Dungeons and Dragons for a very long time. I might have played just like one game of the third edition here or there, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think for definitely for someone who's, you know, 11 years old or 12 years old, however old I was, it's quite a lot to take in. Yeah. As an introduction. We managed to kind of, me and my friend managed to kind of pair together the rules and we ran a game. Well, I ran it, but of course there was only one other person. So I ran a DM PC, and he had his character and we kind of played that. And that was fun. We eventually enlisted the help of his dad to DM. Now, he had no idea what this was, this crazy game. But, you know, bless him, he went along with it. And I do remember when I think there was a displacer beast at one point, which of course has two tentacles on its back, but he described them as testicles, which is a very odd thing to happen. So we never played with him again. and from there, I played more and more of third edition. I played some second edition as well, just a little bit. But we found ourselves with a small group playing, you know, after school with the third edition rules. And then I took a bit of a break from it, playing, I had university and things like that. But when I got back, I kind of thought, oh, you know, it'd be really nice to pick it up, what's happening in D&D. That's when fourth edition was out and we started... We got together, me and my friend who had started that kind of role-playing journey, and we got together and we started this fourth edition campaign that went on for a few years. And since then, I've been playing all sorts. And then, of course, eventually I got to starting to write the games, which wasn't necessary. I mean, it was something that when I was a kid, when I was... again, like 9 or 10, I would have this blue notebook, and in this notebook, I would create games, I would invent games, like card games or whatever, or like a role playing game. I didn't really know what a role playing game was then, but I kind of had an inkling. So I'd try and write out rules and things for all these games that they were all inevitably based on video games that I was playing at the time on the PlayStation or whatever, or the Mega Drive or the Genesis. Any Americans are listening. Yeah. So it came from that. So it was probably no surprise that I wanted to continue to write and create games off the back of that, really.
That's great. Actually, just in case anybody's dropping in and is less familiar with role-playing games, even though, and I want to cover this as a topic at some point in the conversation, we're having this big, I think, resurgence of Dungeons and Dragons, maybe role-playing games overall, or at least like a lot more mainstream news or covering news about Dungeons and Dragons. How do you usually talk about, what's your simple definition for a role-playing game to explain to somebody who doesn't know what it is?
I mean, it's kind of playing pretend with your friends, but there's rules to it. It's improvised theater, but somebody's guiding the story, and generally there are dice, but there doesn't have to be dice. I don't know. I don't think I've ever really got a nice kind of one liner to sum up what a role playing game is. I think part of that is because they've diversified so much now. When you had the role playing game, which was Dungeons and Dragons, which is, I guess, what you would call a trad role-playing game, where it is, you've got a games master and you've got that person is talking through a scenario and there's a feedback loop and people are reacting to what that dungeon master's saying or games master, and they're rolling dice and they're playing characters. I think that's very much a traditional and a very, as you say, it's a D&D is insanely popular. It's probably more popular than it's ever been now. But I think with the resurgence of role-playing games and the proliferation of them, you have all sorts now. You know, you have games that are, well, the solo game, for example, you've got the what they call the lyric game, which is almost like an art piece. It could be a poem that is kind of a game and may not actually be designed to be played. There's all sorts of like indie, strange indie games. Of course, you don't even need a games master. You could be playing Fiasco, where you don't need a GM. You're making up a story and you're letting kind of the dice and your motivations and relationships tell that story. So I think now, if you talk about role-playing games, it's a little bit more difficult to say what exactly they are.
That's true. I mean, that when you dive into it, there's a lot of different waves and currents of different kinds of games. I usually go with a simple definition of a collaborative storytelling game or experience or playful experience.
Yeah, I think
of course it goes in further directions than that, but usually it's a good place to start. Or if I don't want to explain anything, well, I try to avoid just only saying Dungeons & Dragons, because then if the person doesn't know what it is, it doesn't necessarily explain to them what it is if they don't know.
No.
Because they might have an idea about what Dungeons & Dragons is, but they might still not know. So
I read someone asked this question on Twitter a couple of days ago, and there was a really nice definition that someone said, what did they say? It's like a video game, but instead of a console, it's using one person's brain. Something to that.
Something to that effect. That
sounds something to that effect, which I quite liked.
That sounds like a good one. I know that I recently played Fiasco with friends who had never played role-playing games. We're quite excited / intimidated to try a role-playing game. And I find it's a really great and easy one to introduce people. Even though it doesn't have a game master, but it's a really, really fantastic experience. And for anybody listening who doesn't know, if you want to check out Fiasco, it's a game that's designed to play like a scenario of a Coen Brothers movie. And the subtitle is a game of powerful ambition and poor impulse control. So all the characters, like the engine is organized around all these characters that want things, and it's all going to go pretty badly for almost everybody by the end of the story.
Our group's a big fan of Fiasco. Every year the group goes, because we generally tend to play online over Roll20. But we all really like, you know, actually being in the same room and playing physically. So we once or twice a year we'll all go away and we'll rent a cottage somewhere. And we'll essentially have a weekend just to play games. And Fiasco is one of those palate cleansers we like to do, because, you know, you don't need to really create a character per se. I mean, you do have a character, but it's no big character sheet. It's quite easy to play and improvise, and it's always going to surprise you the way that game is going to take you. You don't know from, you know, starting out where that journey is going to end, and I think that's why we really like Fiasco. And as you say, it's very easy to play. It's a very good game to introduce new players to the concept of what role-playing game is, what role-playing games are.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And so that's interesting. So you notice you just mentioned that you usually play online with your friends. Is that partly like schedule, managing schedules, or also they live in different parts of the country, or a bit of both, or?
Yeah, well, so we used to play weekly games together, but that's when we were all just out of university and we all lived in the same city. Now, of course, some of us have families. We've moved to different cities, still relatively close, but we can't really meet up as much as we previously wanted. So, but Roll20 is and kind of those digital tabletop solutions are a godsend, really.
Yeah. And are you still the game master most of the time, or
depends? I for a long time I was the GM, but we've got into a nice almost like a rotation now where you know, I might be a third of the time I might GM, but actually the players are now stepping up and putting on some really great campaigns.
Cool. And so before we started, I mean, I spent a little bit of time aside from Quill that we will definitely talk about, but I don't know if that's where you started writing games. You might have written other games before. That was not your first, was it?
It wasn't my first, no. I started. It all goes back to a game called Tunnels and Trolls, which I don't know
I've never read it.
if you've
No,
heard
I mean,
of.
I've know it's one of the very first games along with Dungeons and Dragons, I believe, right?
Yeah, so it is the very likely the second role-playing game ever made, and it was by a guy called Ken Saint-Andre, who's turned out to be a pretty good pal, and he saw what D&D were doing, or what Gygax and Arneson did with D&D, and he thought, you know what, I really like this idea, but I don't understand any of the rules. You know, you need all these funny dice. I live, in the middle of Arizona. I have no idea where to get these dice. I'm going to make my own game. So he created this game that is, if you look at it now, it's almost like an indie system, where you have the first universal task resolution in it, and it's this quite a tongue-in-cheek fantasy role-playing game that's very, very easy to pick up, and it's very easy to improvise, and it's a fantastic game. And actually, part of what got me into TNT is that they have a really big solo game selection. So they have game books, like the
Was that
Fighting
built in from
Fantasy
the
books.
start, pretty much?
Yeah, right from the beginning. It must have been a design decision there to create Buffalo Castle, which was the first one. And actually, I think that preceded the Fighting Fantasy books. So that was, I
Oh,
think, the
I
first
was just going to
program.
ask what the difference was, because I think people are pretty familiar, or at least I was pretty familiar with, or still am, because I'm not very familiar with solo role-playing games, I don't think. I mean, I get the idea, but and I've tried Quill, but and I have a few others on my book. Iron Sword at the moment is quite popular. I want to check it out. But what would you say? I mean, there's a few questions I want to dig into what you just said, but what would you say is the difference or differences that you've known between choose your own adventure book, fighting fantasy book, and a role-playing game for a single player and the kind of modules on Tunnels and Trolls you're talking about?
So Tunnels and
I say
Trolls were,
modules, if that's a Dungeons and Dragons term, but
yeah, the adventures, the scenarios, whatever they are. With the Fighting Fantasy game book, you essentially have, aside from the Sorcery series, where that's a book of four, you have one character that you kind of create. It's, you roll skill, stamina, luck, and that is your character for that book, and that book is one story. Whereas Tunnels and Trolls, you can take your character that you create into every book ever created, all of these solo adventures. So you can have a campaign like you would any kind of group role-playing game, but you could do it on your own. You could do it completely solo with a character that you've created, and you're leveling up as you go. It just so happens that Tunnels and Trolls is notoriously deadly, so to actually get above level 3 or whatever is pretty difficult.
Right. And I know that, so what are the kind of mechanisms to, I guess, bring some neutrality into the game? I mean, the system of a fighting fantasy book is roll a dice, depending on the results, go to this page or that page. That's like the main driving mechanic, as far as I remember, right?
Yeah, I mean, you choose it, with your dice. You're generally you're trying to save yourself from something, and you might say, okay, well, I don't know, a trapdoor's just opened. Roll on your luck to see if you manage to escape the trap or whatever. And then, yes, you'll go to a certain page.
Yeah, and is there a similar driving mechanic to bring in either randomness or events that you're not narrating yourself or
Yeah,
things
that's
like that?
exactly it.
In okay.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you've got a similar task resolution system, and the thing with
That's
Tunnels
the
and
question I
Trolls
was
is,
going to ask, like, what's
yeah.
the universal, which for anybody who doesn't know and like lets it in, what is a universal task resolution system?
Sure. So for Tunnels and Trolls, it is you roll two dice, 2d6, and you add whatever your stat is that you're rolling on. So if you wanted to jump out of the way of a trapdoor, then you would roll on dexterity and you'd roll 2d6 and you'd add that. And doubles add and roll over. So you kind of have exploding dice there, which is another kind of almost ahead of its time indie invention in mechanics there.
Generally you have a table that says to what level you succeed or fail sort of thing.
Well, you either succeed or you don't. So, okay.
Degrees.
Well, yeah, there's a difficulty rating. So for instance, a level one, they're called saving rolls in Tons of Trolls, but they're not the same saving rolls as in Dungeons and Dragons. It's quite confusing. but 20 is the lowest. That's a level one saving roll. And it goes up by fives each time.
Got it. And is that usually, so that's another term, because I've seen some, just browsing through your blog and a few of the things that seem to be related, this term of OSR, so old school revival, I think the R stands for?
Yeah, it's got a bunch of names, old school renaissance, old school
renaissance,
revival.
Yeah, that's another one I heard about.
Yeah.
Which is just playing in the style of Tunnels and Trolls and other first edition books. I don't know exactly what it is. It just Dungeons and Dragons and Tunnels and Trolls, or...?
This is the question. This is a very loaded question, because actually people in the OSR
community argue all over the place online
it's about playing old school rules. So that could be Tunnels and Trolls, but mainly it's about original Dungeons and Dragons or basic BX Dungeons and Dragons, basic and expert Dungeons and Dragons, and those old school rules. So they started out with these what they called retro clones, which began with Osric, and that became quite popular because it was just a cleaned up version of the old Dungeons and Dragons rules, essentially. And then, you know, you had games like Labyrinth Lord and Swords and Wizardry that were all using different kinds of old editions of Dungeons and Dragons, and they were cleaning things up, and they were, injecting their own spin on certain mechanics. And you've got to a point now where you have entire games that are completely inspired by these old games, but they will bring in new mechanics, or they'll inject in indie mechanics that you might see now with games like the Powered by the Apocalypse games and Dungeon World. So they become a bit of a mishmash, but the idea is that it's gritty play, that you're probably gonna, your character's probably gonna die, and it's about the adage is often rulings, not rules.
Yes.
So it's not slavishly following rules in a book. It's almost improvisation and making things up as you go along.
Great. And did you have an intention? I was also asking because you seem to have an interest in that. Was that something you were trying to do with your first games, or not necessarily?
So I guess, I suppose you could say that the first thing I wrote was OSR, because actually the first thing I wrote was a module for Tunnels and Trolls. And that was just a game master adventure that I put on Lulu or something, make a little bit of extra cash. But I found that I really enjoyed doing it, and some people were saying, it's quite good. I'm not actually looking back, it's probably not that good. So I started there, and kind of very soon I decided to create my own kind of generic rule system, which is a very rule-like system called Unbelievably Simple Role Playing, or USR.
Yeah, I like the name, by the way. I was going to ask you about it.
Thank you. So USR, I put together, it was something like 11 pages, but it was a really simple system that only used a few kinds of die. You only had a few stats, but my aim was to make it something that I would really enjoy playing. And I put that on up online somewhere, 1,000 typewriters, 1,000 monkeys or something. I can't remember the name of it. But people seem to enjoy it. And I put it up on DriveThruRPG and kind of after that, seeing that people seem to be enjoying that, I just started writing more, and I released a second edition of USR, and yeah, I just continued writing new stuff.
And I understand you were published. One of your games was published last year. So the Perilous Realm? No.
Romance of the Perilous Land. Yeah.
Sorry, Perilous Land.
Yeah, yeah. So that was published by Osprey Games, who are a pretty big publisher here in the UK. They're owned by Bloomsbury. And so that was released in December of last year.
Congrats for that.
Thank you.
And is that game using the USR?
No, it's not actually. Okay. No, it's actually an OSR game. yeah, so confusingly named, but yeah, it is an OSR game. So I brought out a first edition of this. It was about 2015, 2014. And I think at that time, it was probably the longest game I've ever written. And that was only like 50 pages. It's not that long. But I wanted to create a rule set that... that spoke to my love of folklore. I've been obsessed with folklore for a long, long time. But I've never, you know, because I'm not a folklore scholar, even though I've always wanted to write a book about folklore, I thought, okay, well, what have I got to say that any other expert couldn't say? But actually, what if I wrote it in the style of a role-playing game, and did it that way, and almost gave people a different kind of experience with folklore. So I released that, and this all comes back to Quill, really, because I released that, and I found that Joseph McCulloch, the designer of Frostgrave, which I don't know if you know.
I don't, but now I'm going to have to take notes and go check out. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so it's a fantastic war game, a skirmish game released by Osprey Games. Okay. And the chap who designed that was talking about Quill. He was looking to thinking about designing some kind of Frostgrave Quill or whatever. And I got in touch with him and said, yeah, that sounds amazing. Do that. And actually, we started talking on email, and he introduced me to one of the line editors at Osprey. And he knew that Osprey were basically looking to launch a role-playing game line. And so I got to talking with them, and, you know, we were quite excited about bringing Romance of the Perilous Land to a bigger audience and making it even meatier than it was. As I say, it was only 50 pages, and the new one is just over 260. So it's a much bigger game than it was. But it's a very simple rules light game. It's based on kind of old school Dungeons and Dragons. It has a roll under mechanic, so if you want to test your strength, for example, you have to roll equal to or under what your strength is, and there are certain difficulty levels and things like that. And you essentially create a character who is in this Arthurian realm of British folklore. That's not quite Britain, but it's based on it. And it allowed me to really pour in all the stuff that I really love about folklore, all the creatures that we have over here in Britain, and the places, and kind of rename them and reskin them, and explore a world like that. But I think it seems to have been pretty well received by the looks of it, which is great.
That's really great. When I'm just curious, like, what's so great about folklore? Like, where did that kind of passion start?
I think it all comes from I like monsters, and I guess you know, being a geeky kid again.
Yeah.
That's, you know, big reader, and I would like reading about ghosts and goblins and things like that, and that all. You know, I guess I just followed that into adulthood, and yeah.
Yeah, the way I understand it, and tell me if I'm right in my assumption, is that I'm automatically assuming that what you mean is particularly researching, how to say this, I was going to say the real stories of creatures and the monsters that we're talking about. So as in ones that are rooted in a lot of history, and locally rather than ones that are made up more recently? Is that this is a really bad way of explaining it's the first words?
No, I think that's right. So it's the things like boggarts and brownies and water dwelling serpents called nookers who would go and raid farmsteads and things. So these creatures that are almost ingrained in the land in Britain, where you actually have street names named after like Boggart Hill, for example. So it's these old stories, and you know, it's also kind of, I wanted to bring in some old magic as well into it. So there's a lot of folk magic. So for instance, if you want to sail a boat and you want to make sure that you weather the storm, you're going to nail a kingfisher to your mast, because that was kind of a folkloric, almost a magical talisman to ward off those bad seafaring trips. So it's like wearing a mole's foot around your neck, or a pouch of salt or something like that. All of these are kind of in there, and they have a mechanical benefit, but it's all drawn from a very kind of actual practice that people used to do.
That's great. And just to have a sense, I'm sure it would be different for different stories, but let's use the example of the bogger. I'm not from pronouncing this right, but when do the stories of Boggart start? Is it Middle Ages? Is it before that? Is it, do we know? Do you have a sense, perhaps?
So I'm not sure with Boggarts, because there are stories that go up into the 1800s and even beyond. I think the thing with folklore is that tales tend to mesh together and meld, and you have stories that come over from Europe and Scotland, for example, and they'll kind of all mesh together, and you'll find new stories that spawn from here. So actually it's quite difficult to find out when something originated. I think for me it's not as important to discover when something originated, but about what people believed or what stories people told, because actually that's a really good gauge on, you know, what their values were. You know, we had things like green anise or black anise or Jenny Greentooth, who were these kind of water spirits, these hag-like beings who would come out of the water, of a body of water, say a local lake or pond or whatever, and they would steal away children, and or they would drag people who were close to the water down into the murky depths. Now that was a story that would have been told to children to keep them away from bodies of water where they would probably fall in and die. So it's what the use was for these stories is really, really interesting to me.
I agree. It is. It's great. Cool. Well, that sounds like a really interesting game, and it sounds like a great read, both if you're interested in trying out the role-playing game, or maybe just if you want to read about a lot of those kind of folklore stories in an alternate, slightly same as Britain, alternate universe sort of thing, right?
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to make it a game that is perfectly accessible for people who are completely new to the hobby, knowing that Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition has become this, you know, juggernaut that it is, that people are probably going to be exploring other games, and having a game that is familiar but different and is set in a completely different world is kind of part of the design philosophy I went in with. Yeah. But yeah, it's got a full setting there, so people can just take, if even if they don't want to use that as their system, they could use it as their setting, because it's all in one book.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Cool. Let's talk a little bit more about Quill. So as we said, well, how do you introduce it? Because there's a whole episode that I published where I actually tested and played the game. I don't know how much I gave it justice. And I just noticed that you sent me some files. So there's translations for a lot of things that, of course, I mentioned in my episodes, like ideas off the cuff. But because I purposely just went along and like didn't research too much, I thought, okay, let's just do something. and record it and publish it. So I should also almost put a, well, this is the edit now, saying actually a lot of the things I talked about, like what if it was in a Lovecraftian universe or things like that, were actually already published.
Yeah, well, it just feels like the right thing to do with Quill. So I guess the premise of Quill is that you are writing a letter for a reason, and you're playing a character from essentially a faux medieval / light fantasy place called Quillia. And you're writing a letter by yourself, solo. And at the end of that letter, you're going to get ranked based on how you performed in that letter. And the way that the game does that is that it gives you some stats, language, penmanship, heart. And you roll against these as you're writing the letter, and you pick certain words from an ink pot. You're getting superior or inferior words while you do it. So if you roll well, you're writing down a superior word, which is going to get you points. If you roll badly, then you're going to get an inferior word and you're going to get no points. And there are other rules in there for things like flourishes. So making your script really nice and flow well, or illuminating it, or anything like that. And heart is about the empathy that you put into the letter. So after you've rolled all this, you do 5 paragraphs, you get a score at the end of it, and you match that score against the outcomes table, which tells you how well your letter has been received. So for instance, if you were telling, if you had spotted an assassin in the town that you're in, and you need to tell the king, there's an assassin around, I need you to look into this, then your high score might be that you get rewarded for telling the king, and the king apprehends, the king's guards apprehend the assassin. If you have the lowest score, it might be actually, well, I'm going to suspect you of being an assassin. I'm going to arrest you. So it's that kind of thing. It's a very simple game to play. And the idea is you'll probably play a couple of games in a session, because it don't take too long to play, but it depends on how long it will take you to write the game.
To write a letter.
It's
I really like the idea of, while writing a letter altogether, just like taking a pen and paper, because it's not something I do very often anymore, even though I still like it, and I still like receiving mail. So I still write and send postcards for sure, letters, like, but not very often. I did a few years ago when I went traveling, and I made a point of it, and people really appreciated it. It was nice. So I don't know if that was where it was coming from, or what was part of the idea for putting it together.
The idea of putting it together was, what's the weirdest kind of game I can make right now? And and it kind of came from that. It's like, what? So there's a game called De Profundis, and that is a really great game, and it is a Lovecraftian game where you write letters to multiple people. Multiple people write letters to each other, and it plays out like a Lovecraft book, a Lovecraft story. So one or both of those people descended to madness. It's almost like LARPing. And I really like that. And I kind of use that a bit as inspiration for Quill. But also, I tried to play De Profundis, but it was quite difficult to get people to continue doing it and sending letters and things.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, well, what if I could make something that's kind of like that, but you're writing a letter, and that's nice. I like letters. But you don't have to have anyone else. But how would you do that? And it was kind of a bit of a challenge to myself. And that's how that came up, really.
Yeah, it is a really interesting challenge. I think one of the main observations I made, and I'm interested in having your take on this, was I really liked the idea, and I probably didn't even give it enough time to do it justice to write a really nice letter. But at the same time, because I was rolling dice to see if my letter was succeeding or not, it didn't feel as important to put a lot of effort into the writing itself. That makes sense?
Sure. Yeah. So,
you need some kind of mechanic, of course, but I'm interested in having your...
Yeah, I think that's totally right. You can absolutely approach it like that. And I think for me, liking writing and I like to kind of get into that character, and I'll write these long paragraphs, and I'll, you know, but that's kind of just the way that I am. I think that obviously people will probably play it in a slightly different way. I think the thing that I really like, and that's really almost touched me in a way, is that I've had people email saying, I'm a teacher, and you know, I have kids who have trouble concentrating on reading or writing, or they just hate doing it, hate writing, or they just can't, you know, don't have the attention span, or whatever it is. Mm. And they've introduced Quill to the class or to that child, and it's got them into writing because it's kind of given them a little bit of a framework around almost a story with a very specific purpose to writing the letter. And I've had people say that they've used it almost in a psychological way with you know, people that they've been working with or patients that have had to almost get them to express themselves a little bit, which is really interesting because obviously that was never the point of creating it. I was just thinking, what's a weird thing that I could
it's fantastic to get that kind of feedback and that kind of return that is making a positive difference for people that you did not expect at all.
It's amazing. It's really interesting how people are using Quill in ways that I never thought that they would.
Yeah, and it's quite popular, right? Because I think you have, I believe you received an award, an indie gaming award for this as well, which is fantastic.
No, that was a big surprise, actually. That was great. You know, it's done really well. I think in the first couple of weeks that I put it on DriveThruRPG, it got to a gold seller. I think it captured people's imagination. I think maybe part of it was that, you know, seeing a new game that comes up on your feed saying a letter writing game for a single player, which is a very strange thing.
It's exactly what happened to me. I just typed in solo games in itch.io and I was like, a letter writing game? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that people were probably quite curious about what it was. And I'm sure there are so many people who have looked at it and thought, you know what, this isn't for me. But, you know, fine, they downloaded it. But a lot of people really enjoy it. There's been some amazing people I've been working with recently who are doing translations of it. There's a company that I'm working with at the moment that's bringing that to Spain as well. So which is fantastic to see that it's taken off. But also, I'm a little perplexed about why people like it so much.
That's great. I need to try. And this is like, I'm thinking, and I thought about this afterwards, that I've some points that I hadn't really talked about in the episode I published, which are thinking back, and this is more on the professional and marketing side, more than the game itself, but a lot of, and also for people listening who might be working in my field or maybe PR as well, if they're still around. I never know who's listening to this, but I just decided I'm going to be doing definitely more gaming anyway, regardless. Yeah. Typically, I, as a strategist, when I'm working with an agency, and if I'm crossing between the business side and a creative team, I'm writing this kind of this creative brief that is a bit of an intention for what is the communication or a whole plan for how is this brand going to be perceived? And that can come out in a variety of ways. That can be in a workshop or a creative brief. Anyway, I'm thinking that I think it might be a really interesting exercise for some people sometimes to be thinking about, what if there was a scenario, and you could include that possibly in a work environment, to think about, all right, somebody has seen the message that you're trying to put across and it's been communicated, and you could have a format of a scenario for one of the letters to write back and say, okay, your audience, the person you were targeting, has received the message in the way that you wanted. How are they, and they're writing a letter to, I don't know, thank you, for example. Or the other way around, completely opposite. They did not get it right at all. And why? I'm thinking about different kinds of situations like that. I'm completely thinking out loud. So I don't know if that might apply to a PR environment or not.
I think it's really interesting. I'm a big fan of using games to come up with ideas for campaigns or new processes or something like that. I use a set called Rory's Story Cubes, which, if you don't know what Rory's Story Cubes are, they are 9 dice, and each of them has a different picture on the side of them. And the idea is that you roll a few dice and you create a story out of them, and you kind of improvise a little story. So I quite like, when I'm brainstorming by myself, when I'm not in with a team, is to roll some story cubes. And it almost helps with that lateral thinking. Mm. If I'm trying to think up an idea for, I don't know, a travel company, I might roll some dice and think, okay, well, what do these symbols tell me about XYZ? What does it tell me about the audience? What kind of story can I get from this that I could apply to the travel sector? It's an interesting way of doing things. So I think there's probably a really nice execution there that you could do it for whatever way you want to do with Quill, in that you have a structure and you have some ingredients. So you could have several people putting into these ingredients, and you could be writing a brief for an email marketing campaign or whatever, and you could fill these this brief with these ingredients and kind of see how that plays out. Or I don't know, there are probably a few executions you could do around it, but
definitely keep in touch if ever I manage to use this in some setting. And that's like a lot of the things that I want to do and I like to do with my clients as well. So I'll check out the story dice. Along the same line, something that we were having a conversation about, just to, because I think it's relevant, with the French podcast I was mentioning, Le Voile Altarid, the last episode we recorded, we had the topic of conversation. So this is all about role-playing game and theory, typically. We talked about randomized tables. And seeing in what directions that took us. And among other things that we were talking about are what are the things that can be useful for not necessarily randomized tables, how do you use tables or any kind of formalized way to hold different bits of content that you might use for a role-playing game for inspiration? And one of the things that we were talking, so we did talk about dice, but I didn't know this particular set of dice you mentioned. Another thing we talked about are abstract images. So, for example, if you take a deck of cards from, say, the board game Dixit, that has these very beautiful art images and cards, or Mysterium is another one, or Obscurio, I think, is another one like that.
Yeah.
You could use other things, but those are for anybody listening. If you could pick that deck of cards, and every one of them has very abstract and interesting art images. They can, you can use them to see what they inspire. I know of another strategist who used to use just a tarot deck when he was working on workshops with people, just to draw out inspiration top of mind or things that images might inspire.
Yeah, I sometimes do the same. I think that using a tarot deck is great because it gives you, it can give you a few keywords. It can give you the what does this image say about this situation?
Yes.
And just draw one and see what that gets you, because it does help you get out of the linear mindset that you might Absolutely. Go in with.
And Once Upon a Time is another one to mention. I'm just looking at that on my.
Oh, great game! Yeah,
it's a fantastic game as well. I would say that tarot is very interesting and also equally to be wary of in some situations, because I was talking about that. And depending on how you bring that up with clients in a professional meetings workspace, it can be sometimes a little bit weird.
Because
there's a lot of other connotations going on with the tarot deck that maybe the abstract images of Dixit don't have.
Sure.
Cool. This is great. Well, Vincent, thank you very much, Scott. The fantastic conversation. So is there any other projects you have going on before we move on to like the final cool down questions? I don't know whether big conventions for the year or gaming projects that you have going on at the moment.
I mean, I've got a couple of projects that I've got going on in the background, working for a couple of publishers. But I can't really say anything yet.
Okay.
I mean, I might be able to, but I just like saying that I can't say anything yet because it makes me feel quite mysterious.
Yes.
But no, I probably can't say anything yet, but I think probably quite soon. But there's a couple of projects that I'm really excited about that I'm working on at the moment.
That's great.
And I'm going to be definitely writing some more Quill. I've just had a book out in Spain, called, well, it's called Cuentos de Animas. I might be butchering that, but it's based on a book that I brought out called English Eerie, which is another solo role-playing game, storytelling game.
Okay.
And that came out in Spain not too long ago. In fact, in the same week that I launched Romance of the Perilous Land, and that's with Refugio de Rhyhope, a new publisher over there. So hopefully doing some more work with them as well. In terms of conventions, I've only ever been to one in terms of a role-playing game convention, and that was one where we launched Romance, which was at Dragon Meet last year. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to do some more, but I'm not sure yet, but there's plenty going on.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. All right, well, let's finish with the cool down questions that I usually ask my guests at the end of the conversation. And given it's the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast, it's a silly one, but do you have a favorite ice cream flavor?
Ooh, I really like vanilla. Is that boring? I don't know.
There's a whole connotation around the boring, but you know what? I like a good vanilla flavor too. So, you know,
yeah, it's got a very complex taste as vanilla, actually. It's I do like vanilla. Yeah.
There you go. So we talked about games a lot, but is there a game that you particularly enjoy and recommend other people playing? So it could be a role-playing game or a video game or anything that you're playing at the moment and have been enjoying.
Ooh, so my regular game is Pathfinder 2nd Edition, which I very much enjoy, and Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition. Everyone should play it. People hate it, but they don't know why, really.
Okay. Okay. And is that over because some people might be listening? And for anybody that doesn't know, the main Dungeons and Dragons edition that is out and most people are playing is the 5th edition.
Correct. Yes. Correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So, that's right.
For anybody who doesn't know, would you recommend they bother with the go and find out several editions or?
I think that if you're
this is maybe digging in too deep into something, but
if you're just starting out, I think probably go with 5th edition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. What's the last piece of art, or something media wise that had an impact on you? So it could be anything from a painting to the last TV show you watched, anything.
Oh, yeah. So I really like art. So I've just been reading through a book that I got about Alphonse Mucha and his amazing artwork. He's fantastic. I think that pretty much everything that he does was incredible. So anything Alphonse Mucha.
Okay, I don't think I know him, so I should check him out. Or at least the name doesn't ring a bell. I might have seen his work, but
it's he essentially didn't necessarily launch Art Nouveau, but he was one of those kind of the big names in Art Nouveau.
Cool, thank you. And if you could give one thing to anybody, to everyone, it just doesn't have to be a physical thing. It could be whatever. Like you make a wish and everybody has it. What would that be?
Yeah, I mean, empathy would probably be a good one at the moment.
Good. Perfect.
Yeah.
Great. Anything else you'd like to add, and where can people find you? And I believe, well, the Trollish Delver website for sure.
Yeah, sure. So trollishdelver.com is my blog, and you can find me on Twitter at trollishdelver for my gaming feed. But I also have a folklore feed called Wheel of Folklore. Which is pretty much all folklore and spooky things. Yeah.
Oh, nice. I should check that out. Fantastic. Scott, thank you very much for the conversation. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on. It's been fantastic.
All All right, another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast done. I hope you enjoyed listening. I really enjoyed the conversation with Scott. As I said at the beginning and in the intro, we're going to have more of those kinds of episodes, or at least I intend to. I also did a couple of recordings, I forgot to say in the intro, of me playing board games to check out if that might work as a podcast format. But the thing is, from an audio perspective, there's a lot of commenting on what I'm doing, but you can't see. And there's a lot of visual pieces for a board game to make sense, I think. So, I mean, the recording I did, I think I'm just going to trash it. It's not going to work. So, on the other hand, role-playing games and storytelling games work pretty well because you're telling a story. So, that can be, that can work well from an audio perspective. I think it works well in other podcasts. I think that has potential. So, I want to keep focusing on that side of things. Plus, it's what I'm interested in the most, I think. I'm going to really, really like board games, and I like board games mechanics to use in brand strategy workshops. But I also really love role-playing games and storytelling games. So that's something I'm looking at. As I said at the beginning, if you enjoyed this episode, please post a review from your favorite podcast app, whether it's the iPhone, Apple app, or iTunes. I think iTunes moved their podcast over just to the podcast app. I'm not sure exactly what it looks like from a review perspective because I have an Android phone, essentially. I need to look at it on somebody else's phone. Actually, that's something I should start doing, just get people to write the review straight off their phone. Maybe I should just do that. Anyway, or you could just tweet at me. That's at Icy Villain, not Icy. I mean, still thinking about skiing. Letters Incwillem. And the full website is at icecreamforeveryone.net. And my email, Willem, Willem, at icecreamforeveryone.net. If you have any questions about brand strategy or the workshops I lead or anything that you're looking at developing for your own business, always happy to chat and have a coffee or whatever. So yeah, reach out if you do. And otherwise, I'll see you and have a great afternoon, morning, good night, whatever time of day or night it is for you. All right, bye.